This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Emails from the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services reveal that the agency chose corporate cooperation over public disclosure. Under pressure from local health departments, NCDHHS did not publicly report details about COVID-19 outbreaks at the state's meat processing facilities. Meat processing plants are hotspots for the coronavirus in North Carolina. But unlike nursing homes, correctional facilities, and child care centers, they're not regulated by DHHS. WNC's data reporter Jason DeBruin is here to share the story, which he worked on in collaboration with the NC Watchdog Reporting Network. Welcome back, Jason.
Hi, Frank. Good to be with you again.
Good to have you. Tell us about the information in these emails.
Well, so DHHS on May 1st floated the idea to local health departments that they would publish essentially a roster of meat processing facilities and then list the number of COVID-19 outbreaks, or cases, I should say, at each of those facilities. And less than 90 minutes later, at least a couple of local health department directors quickly shot back emails to Central, DHHS Central, saying that this would be a really bad idea and that this would present pretty significant problems for their good working relationship that they had at the meat processing facilities.
Well, why is that? I mean, DHHS does not have regulatory oversight over those plants, right?
That's exactly right. As you mentioned at the top, DHHS does regulate, like nursing homes, for instance. That's another area where there's a lot of hotspots or, COVID-19 outbreaks. But those nursing homes are required by law that when there is an outbreak, or certainly more than one outbreak, they're required by law to report that information back to DHHS, which then, posts that publicly so people know where there are cases and outbreaks. Not the case for meat processing facilities. And so local health departments more have to work collaboratively and be invited in, so to speak, or have this information given to them voluntarily by the meat processing plants, which, of course, are private industry. And so the local health departments were nervous that if there was perhaps public shaming by, listing the names of these meat processing facilities, that would sort of harm the goodwill and that then these facilities might just clam up and not say anything at all.
So you and the NC Watchdog Reporting Network interviewed DHHS Secretary Mandy Cohen about the agency and why it wasn't reporting those specific numbers in meat processing plants. Let's listen to a bit of what she had to say.
When we put out data, we want it to be a complete and accurate picture, right? And so we did not feel like that we had a full and complete picture because of that lack of requirement on their side for reporting. And if anything, we were saying, if you actually come forward to us and work with us, you might end up on the website.
DHHS Secretary Mandy Cohen talking to WUNC data reporter Jason DeBruin and others in the NC Watchdog Reporting Network. Talking to Jason now. So again, that they were worried that they'd be penalized, that the meat processing plants might feel penalized for coming forward and working with local health departments. And what else?
Right, exactly.
And what else did you hear from Secretary Cohen?
Well, just that they want to be invited and they want to continue working with these meat processors. It's an environment where the virus just can tend to spread quite easily. It's very cold in an environment where the virus likes to live. It's very loud. And so people are working, pretty close proximity to each other and having to yell, to communicate. So that's just, it just happens to be an environment where the virus really likes to live and is really easily spread. And so from the public health perspective, people with local health departments and DHHS want to be invited in to help with, for instance, recommendations about how to set your facility up in order to reduce transmission, or with perhaps testing sites that are there as opposed to sending people to, emergency departments, for instance, or also with contact tracing, which is very good at limiting the spread, right? And so DHHS wants to be involved with these meat processing facilities, and so is therefore having to, in some ways, play nice with them and find an agreement, a middle ground as opposed to being able to simply come in and say, no, this is what you have to do.
Wants to be involved, as you said, to make recommendations. Does anyone or who does have regulatory authority over these companies? Can anyone tell them what to do?
Well, there is some regulatory oversight provided by both the Department of Agriculture and, of course, the Department of Labor, which would, you know, oversee, for instance, OSHA compliance. And that's another thing that we looked at, actually, in a previous story. There were actually 75 OSHA complaints related to the coronavirus, so COVID-19 complaints that were submitted by people at meat processing facilities, but not a single one of those at the time of our reporting resulted in a site visit. It's interesting how the Department of Labor reviews these complaints. Some of them they just simply dismiss outright, and others they, quote, investigate, but an investigation could be something as simple as an email or a phone call to a site lead or a general manager at one of the plants, but not necessarily require an in-person visit by one of the regulators at the Department of Labor. And of those 75, again, not a single one at the time of our reporting resulted in an in-site visit. So the folks at the Department of Labor were not even going out to these plants to check on the complaints.
And they do have regulatory authority. So what do we know about the complaints? What's in them?
So it's a variety of things. And certainly some of the ones earlier on, you could say have been satisfied. Some of the earlier complaints were that, for instance, there was no PPE that had been provided, right, or perhaps not enough. As the pandemic stretched on, and clearly by now, I think all meat processing facilities are at least providing PPE to their workers and have, dividers, and certainly in like lunchrooms and things of that nature. So some of the complaints have been satisfied, but, still, and yet others have complained that, for instance, if they aren't feeling well, that they're still hit with demerits for not showing up to work, and that there's still ways of tracking, if you don't show up to work and you reach a certain amount of days that you haven't shown up, that you can, of course, be penalized for that. It's a variety of complaints that are being lobbied against them.
So when it comes to regulatory authority, you mentioned the Department of Labor in the state of North Carolina and the Department of Agriculture, but it appears there has not been much collaboration between the Department of Labor and the Department of Agriculture and DHHS over this. Politics involved?
Yes, and certainly that would be the position of Secretary Cohen and DHHS, is that they would like to be invited in and work more collaboratively, for instance, with the Departments of Labor and Ag, but say that they have not really been invited in enough. And you mentioned politics, and actually politics do play a role here. It's really quite interesting, and actually I didn't even know about this until I started looking at it. North Carolina is one of only four states in which the Commissioner of Labor is an elected position. So I'm sure listeners know that at some point or another, they perhaps have voted for or against Cherie Berry. She's been in office since 2000, so really for quite some time. Well, we're only one of four states where that's an elected position. In every other state, that's an appointed position, just like the Secretary of DHHS is an appointed position. Now, that's not to say that this is a bad setup, but it does present some interesting wrinkles where you have labor almost as its own, independent organization, where the head of that department is responsible answerable directly to voters, whereas at DHHS, the head of that organization, Secretary Cohen, answers directly to Governor Cooper. Now, I don't mean to suggest that it's not political. Clearly it is, but you can still see where there's sort of a difference there in the chain of command, so to speak. And then, of course, layer on top of that, Cherie Berry is a Republican. Governor Cooper, of course, is a Democrat. And so in North Carolina, as around the country, Democrats and Republicans don't often work well together. And so that just sort of adds an additional layer onto, where they might not be working so well together.
That's true of the Secretary of Agriculture as well, is it not?
Indeed. Yeah. And we're one of 12 states where the Secretary of Agriculture is an elected position. Those are almost all in the South, East, and also some like in Iowa, for instance, but so a lot of ag heavy states, but 12, obviously more than four, but still clearly a minority of all states.
Interestingly enough, all of those up for election, all those positions up for election this November, eh?
Everything is up for election. That's right. Be careful and know who you're voting for. It's those Council of State elections don't get nearly the same attention as the governor, lieutenant governor, and certainly at the national level. But they can be very important, you know, not only in cases like this, for instance, but certainly when you're talking about worker safety in general. The Department of Labor in North Carolina has a lot of oversight over how companies treat their employees. And so it's very important for people who care about such things to know who you're voting for.
What does all this mean for workers? Obviously, this political tension within what is known as the Council of State, not under the executive authority, as it is in most states, of the governor, creating these political tensions, as you say, elections this November. But in the meantime, what does all this mean for workers in the plants?
Well, just that they're potentially entering into a workplace that has the coronavirus, again, living in it and a place where it likes to live. And again, to be clear, you know, these meat processing facilities have invested millions, even perhaps tens of millions of dollars into protecting the workplace, and especially, again, at these meat processing plants where the virus likes to live. So I don't mean to suggest they're, you know, just walking into a place where they're definitively going to contract the virus, but the virus does like to live there. These are people who are oftentimes already, you know, a disenfranchised people group. And they're going into workplaces because they have to work. You know, they have rent to pay for. They're caring for family members in many cases. It's not like they can just afford to go weeks or even months without a paycheck. In some cases, these are the only jobs that they can get or one of the few. But it clearly presents a higher risk. I mean, for me, for instance, I'm able to completely work from home or almost completely. Mm-hmm. And so this isn't a problem that I have to face. But for many people that are on the front lines, you know, this is an issue that they deal with day to day.
Jason DeBruin, WNC data reporter. Thank you, Jason.
You're welcome.
Links to his reporting at our website, stateofthings.org.